I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah, to all you TV junkies out there in AfterBuzz TV land, we have an extra special treat for you today as we kick off American television icons. And what better way to do that than to have a guest with us that has graced our television screens for the last several decades. She spent 9 years on CBS for the hit TV series Alice, and she's a recipient of 2 Golden Globe Awards, been nominated for a daytime, a primetime Emmy, 6 nominations for the Tonys with 1 win, 2 Drama Desk Awards, and the list goes on and on. So let's get into it right now as we give a warm welcome to the legendary and iconic Miss Linda Lavin.
Oh, wow.
Yay!
Thank you so much.
I feel like I just did a cardio workout.
That was the most energetic introduction I've ever had, and I loved every bit of it. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
So happy to be here.
I'm so excited to have you.
Very exciting. I mean, I'm very, very thrilled to be on with you in this whole new world for me. Yeah. I've just been writing, you know, texting people to say how to Google and get to see a live stream and all that. Is I have no idea how to do it, but my friends do.
Aww.
It's a good thing.
Well, you know, we barely scratched the surface of your career. And that little intro, because you've just done so much.
Yeah.
I feel like it would take us weeks to get through everything. And it's such an honor, too, because fun little story.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you remember the first day you and I met?
The first day you and I met?
Uh-huh.
I remember writing to you before we met. I remember texting you and finding you online. Not in a dating way, by the way.
So just a quick story,
tell how we met. Tell me.
Okay, because this is just a testament to who you are and the kind of person that you are.
Oh, I hope it's good.
It's good.
Okay, good.
So the first day we met, you looked at me and you said, "Oh, honey, are you a dancer?" And I said, "I used to, but, you know, I'm into hosting and acting more." And you said, "Oh, that's so nice. I do some acting, too."
I did?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
It's true,
I do
Will.
Some acting, too.
I was like, she looks familiar.
We strive for humility at a certain age, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
That's nice.
It was very lovely. So I want to ask you, though, now that you're moving, you're going through all of your photos and seeing all the different moments of your career.
Yeah.
What type of emotions resurface when you see all the things that you've done?
Wow, that's a great question, because there are a lot of emotions and a lot of different types of emotions having to do with, oh, I was really cute 30 years ago, you know.
You
look at yourself,
are.
Thank you very much. You look at stuff, I mean, you know, I've been looking at pictures from since I was born, baby pictures, and I've kept them all, and I've traveled from the East Coast to the West and back to the East, and now I'm moving again, and so I have to go through stuff, because I really do have to purge, you know. We know about purging.
Yeah.
And so I think I've taken photographs of everything and thrown out a lot. I've thrown out pounds and pounds of old pictures and clippings. And one of the emotions is, how many of these do I have? There's so many, because people send you stuff. Then there's that. And the other emotion is, besides the memory part that comes up and you kind of long for your youth and you long for that time, and then you remember who you were married to, or what a lousy job that was, or, you know, you remember stuff about it that balances the joy. There's so much joy in looking back at your life. There's also sadness, because you're looking back. And somebody just said the best thing to me recently. They said, you know, the rearview mirror is small, the windshield is large. And that's true for a reason. And I love that. Looking back is not necessarily the best idea. We're not going in that direction, you know.
Yeah.
We're going forward. But there are times when you do, for instance, right now, have to look back. I do a nightclub act, and my whole act is about looking back.
Yeah.
It's about, here's what happened, and here's the song I sing about that, or here's the song I used to sing. So there are lots of emotions. There's excitement, there's loss, there's sadness, there's grief about losing your youth, not being that person you used to be. And then there's remembering that it was either a great time or a happy memory or not such a happy memory.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at pictures and also the real realization, I think, which is hopefully very mature of me, is to say, I don't need to keep these things around anymore to show people who come to my home who I used to be. Mm-hmm. I don't need to display my life on the walls of my home. I don't need to get everything framed. And please, everything has been framed.
Yeah.
But I don't need to show it anymore. I just need to live my life right now and be who I am now and trust that, you know, I'm enough and that mm-hmm. I did enough. People either know or they don't know, but that's not what I have to do. I don't have to go around saying, do you know who I used to be?
Yeah.
That's a big one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gee, with all that said, we are going to reflect, though, on some of the great things
okay.
that you've done today.
I'm willing to do that.
Thank you.
Yes.
So we're going to play, since there's so many different things you've done,
okay.
to truncate it really quick, because I know a lot of people are probably going to want to hear a lot about Alice and your experience with
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
But we're going to play something called... Oh, you can't hear the music. It's Michael Jackson. Do you remember the time... So it's called Do You Remember the Time?
Yes.
We're going to flash a few pictures of different moments of your career.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me two things.
Okay.
One, who's in the picture with you if you're with somebody?
Okay.
And two,
oh God,
what,
I hope I remember.
What memory does this capture for you?
Okay.
Okay. So starting with somebody you love very much.
I do. Well, there's Carol Burnett on the right of the picture. And there's Hal Prince, and we just lost Hal Prince in July. And Hal was the great director, producer of Phantom and Cabaret and Fiddler on the Roof and many, many Broadway hits, musicals. And he pulled me out of the chorus and gave me my first speaking part on Broadway and my first Broadway musical. So I go way back with Hal. I was young, and so was he. And he and his wife, Judy, have been remarkable family friends to me. They became my family in New York. He was my mentor and continues to be in my mind and my spirit. I wouldn't be here, and most of us who work in the Broadway musical theater wouldn't be here without Hal Prince. He made it. He made it what it was and what it is. And there's never been anybody with a greater vision, a greater aspect of what a play and what a musical should be, what should it look like, who should be in it in order to carry the message, tell the story. His productions were beautiful and massive and intimate at the same time. He was one of a kind, and we miss him terribly.
So let me ask you this. What do you think it was about you that drew his attention to pull you out of the chorus line?
Well, I'll tell you how I met him. I was backstage in this Broadway musical. We were trying it out in Philadelphia, and the director of the time, the guy that was directing the show, had a problem and had to be released. So they were looking for a new director. I didn't know this. I was just in the chorus, and I was backstage on a payphone, and this dynamo, this man who was, you know, it was 1961. Walked through the stage door and saw me on the payphone. I had no idea who he was. And he looked at me and he said, "You're terrific. I'll see you later."
Ooh.
And then I found out that he had seen the show the night before and he was here to be introduced as the new director of the show. So what he saw was how I performed, even in the chorus, because I was a bit of a show-off. And he picked me out, and he said, "Give her some speaking parts." So I got four speaking parts for $5 a piece each.
Nice.
Those were the wages in those days. It was damn nice, $20 extra a week, because I think we made $125 a week in the chorus. And so that was my first, you know, breakout from being a singer to being an actor, which is what I thought I was anyway, you know. Yeah. Singing was just a way to get in the auditions.
Yeah, yeah. That's
yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah, so that's who
Let's
he,
go to
he
our
is.
Next, our next sure. photo in memory.
Okay.
Let's make it larger since we're on the topic of Broadway.
Yes, yes. Well, that's Jonathan Silverman, and he played my son in the Neil Simon hit Broadway Bound, which was an autobiographical piece that Neil Simon wrote about his mother and father and growing up funny.
Yeah.
Growing up with his, Jonathan played Jerome, and his brother was played by, oh my God, don't do this, Jason, he plays, oh my God, oh, this is terrible, very famous actor, and I'm just blocking it right now, from Seinfeld, come on.
Jason Alexander.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So Jason and Jonathan were my sons. I played the mother. This is a woman who is very sad and very shut down as I just was a minute ago, but she's emotionally shut down. And one night she sits at the dining room table, which she loves because she got it from her grandmother, and her son says to me, "Tell me about the time you danced with George Raft, who was a famous movie star." And I say, "Ah, you heard it a million times." And he says, "Yeah, but tell it again." And she tells the story of when she ran away with her sister to go to this dance, and she met this famous, and he danced with her. She met George Raft. And at a moment in the monologue, which was a 12-page monologue that Neil wrote for me, I know, try learning that now. And in a moment, she gets up. He says, "Show me how you danced." And she says, "Ah, it's her son, you know," and she's embarrassed. And he says, "No, show me." And that's a moment from when she shows, and she becomes... The memory I have about the Sally Kona is that Neil Simon came to me in rehearsal, and he said, "I'm going to write you a monologue because I want to see this woman when she was happy." That's the kind of great writer that he was. Yeah. I want to see a moment in her life when she was happy. And that's the moment when she was happy, when she was reliving being a 15-year-old, being young and full of promise, as we all were.
Yeah.
And she shows her son a part of herself, and then she shuts down again. So it's a very special piece, and it got me the Tony Award that year.
It sure did.
It sure did, and much recognition.
And there you are with that Tony Award.
There you go. There you go. That's right. And that's James Earl Jones, who won for Fences that year. Oh, my God, that was a great night. He was wearing a red scarf across his shoulders. I'd never seen a man wear such a beautiful, flamboyant piece. Now all we have to do is look at the red carpet, you know, right?
Yeah.
I look at Billy Porter.
Yeah.
But so that's the moment after the win.
So but let me ask you this. Yeah. What did it feel like when they said your name as the winner?
You know, they speak of it, and they did on the Oscars the other night, as an out-of-body experience. You really have to pull yourself back into your body because you have to walk down the aisle, and you have to get up steps, and you're like, did I crawl up those steps? I have no memory of how I got to the stage. So you are out of your mind. It's kind of like a panic attack, I think. I think the frontal lobe opens up, and your brain is all naked going, whoa, what do I do? And you got to get to the stage. You know, I had thought about it a lot because there was a lot of buzz, forgive the pun, there was a lot of buzz about me that year winning. And I was in a category with remarkable actresses. And so it was not something I was sure of. Mm-hmm. And it's always awful when people say, "You're going to win," you know, and you think, "Oh, what if I don't? And will I disappoint you?"
Yeah.
It's such a personal moment. And yet it's a very public moment.
Yeah.
My father, who at that time was 92, came up from Florida. My mother had passed, and I invited him to come. I said, "Dad, you got to get a rent a tuxedo."
Aww.
And he came to be with me, and my best friend was his date.
Aww.
And so he was there with me, too. You know, it was all about that. It was all about saying thank you and being recognized and the joy of it, the surprise of it. And yet there's that hope in the back of you and that part of you that has prepared a speech, because you don't want to be a blithering idiot when you get up there.
Right,
you know,
right.
You do want to thank the people that have gotten you that far,
right,
and acknowledge how it feels. It
yes.
feels, you know, it's hard to put a word to that feeling.
Yeah, I could only imagine.
It's a high point,
yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It sure is.
I'm
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go to our next memory. All right, who you with?
Oh, my
How
God.
How did you get here?
Well, that's the Dean Martin Christmas special.
Yeah.
And that's Crystal Gayle on the other side of Dean Martin. And that would be me, Slim. Those were my Slim years. So I was just about to sing "Thank God I'm a Country Girl" with him. But my solo in that show was "It Might As Well Be Spring," which is a wonderful song to sing in a Christmas special. The ranch we were driven out to every day, and it was filmed on the week of my birthday, which is in October, mid-October. Mm-hmm. And Crystal Gayle had a big hit, "Don't It Make Your Brown Eyes Blue."
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to meet him. And, you know, I knew him from the time I was very young. I knew him and Jerry Lewis. They were so important in my life as entertainers. And I got to sing that beautiful song, and we were in Calabasas, or I don't even know, maybe further west, somewhere in the valley on a ranch. And Jonathan Winters, the famous comedian, was in the show, and we got into I remember getting into one of those big sleighs. They were doing the sleigh. Oh, hear the sleigh bells jingling, all Christmas stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jonathan Winters and I didn't know. Bring out the holly.
Yeah, yeah. Da, da, da.
And we would go na 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 na. And we go again. Had no idea what the words were. Never bothered to learn them because we were surrounded by the dingalings, which were his chorus of girls. That was what he called his girl chorus.
Wonderful.
Hilarious. And we never ever learned, and we just looked, and Jonathan Winters was a genius comic, you know. So I got that memory to sing na 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 with him. Just like wow, we are really not good sports. But I did get to sing It Might As Well Be Spring.
Aww.
Yeah, and he was very nice to me, Dean Martin. Very nice.
Aww.
Yeah.
So our next moment, a little bit back into Broadway a bit, but I just like the picture. Oh, well, actually, we have some Goldens. Popping
oh, here's
up
a golden.
Here. Look at you.
That's my first Golden Globe. That was completely unexpected. And there's Alan Alda. So he won for MASH, and I won for Alice. And really, I had no idea what this was.
Really?
We were so naive then, you know. We didn't have stylists, baby. You know, you just like, there's going to be a dinner and it's an award ceremony. Do you want to come? It was like that.
Oh.
So, you know, come or the studio. There was buzz around it. But I had a friend who came over and she was staying with me from New York. Jo Beth Williams, very famous actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, do you want to go to this thing tonight? I mean, I that's how I said it.
Yeah.
I said, it's an award ceremony, and you want to go with me? It's like TV and movies. What I like about it is that it's the combination of the two neighborhoods, you know, of the two communities, so that you get to see everybody that you're a fan of and people you even know. And so we went, and I put on this beautiful hand-painted – that's not in color, is it?
No.
There is a color picture somewhere. Beautiful hand-painted coat and that had been done by a friend of mine. And, you know, I did my own hair. I did my own makeup. And there was Alan Alda. And all of a sudden they said, you know, best actress in a comedy. And they said my name. And you sat at tables and you were eating and drinking all night. So by the time the awards came, most people are just, you know, gone. And, you know, you get a little whoopsie. And so, but I got up. I couldn't believe, and I looked at my friend who had come with me thinking this was just going to be a place to see famous people.
But there you are, the famous person.
Suddenly one of them was me.
Wow.
And I remember my speech because I got to see people I had started out with. And I mentioned their names in my speech. I was totally unprepared. Where for the Tony, I was way better prepared. That came years later. This was what? What year was this? 1978 or 9? It was after Alice had been on for a couple of years. And the shocking thing was the next year I went and I dressed up a little better and I knew a little more and I won again.
Yeah.
So that really surprised me. I didn't think you're going to get two in a row.
Yeah.
I didn't think that would be possible and I would be fine with one.
Yeah.
So now I got two.
That's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting.
That's really exciting.
It is. It is.
All right, let's hop ahead, see what else we pull up.
All right.
Do you believe? And... oh, okay. Let's take a look at you and Rob Lowe.
Rob
I feel like
Lowe.
This picture is the epitome of the sassy version of you when you're on stage singing.
Oh, that's nice. You are right. She's sassy. She's this is a character who kept this young man as her lover, and he's not happy about it, but he goes along because why? She's got money. She's a society matron. This is from the movie
How to Be a Latin Lover.
And, wow, Derbez, Eugenio Derbez is the star of it with Rob. Everybody is so jealous of me, all my female friends and my gay male friends, because everybody loves Rob Lowe and wants to go to bed with him. So that's who he is. And that was a moment where I was putting him on a diet. I wouldn't let him eat.
Oh, how funny.
We're at the country club for lunch, and he wants that steak, and I'm just teasing him. So he's very sweet, very, very calm, very focused to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was lovely to meet him and work with him for a few days. In Eugenio Derbez was lovely. I had to speak Spanish in this film. It was hard to learn because Spanish is not my second language. French is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was having trouble with it. And Mr. Derbez said, "Listen, Linda, now you know how I feel to learn English, to speak in English." You know, mm-hmm. He was very kind to me. I had to do a lot of takes.
Oh.
Yeah, very sweet experience.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about Alice? Because I feel like we've done so many different things on TV, and it's pretty cool that you've worked so consistently. But this was the big one, and it derived from a movie.
Yeah.
So was it for you, you know, very nerve-wracking to step into a role where somebody had already played Alice before, and now there's this audience expectation of who this person is supposed to be?
Hey, AfterBuzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
I don't remember that I had that any kind of panic about it, but I'm sure I did have a respectful distancing from the desire to distance, or a respectful attitude about that performance, which won her an Oscar and which was a beautiful film about a very real woman. What I did have was a commitment to keep her real, knowing that sitcoms can sometimes go into the advanced stage of reality, if you know what I mean.
Right.
They can be over the top. They can be too broad. They can be a diversion from reality in order for the joke to work. And my desire was to tell a story about a single mom, a working woman. And so I really didn't identify with the movie, because going into TV is a whole other audience, as you know.
Yeah.
And there was a boy. There was going to be a son. There was going to be a kid. She was going to be a waitress. She was somebody who wanted to sing, and I could sing. I mean, the way I got Alice was I was under contract to Warner Brothers for 2 years, and it took 2 years for them to come up with a script for me. Mm-hmm. And when they did, CBS rejected the script.
Really?
Yes. And so the head of CBS TV – I'm sorry, the head of casting at CBS TV called the head of development at CBS TV, and this was 1974, and he said, "What's happening with this script we have on my shelf called Alice?" And the development person said, "Well, we can't find an actress who sings as well as acts." And Alan Shane, who was the head of casting at CBS, said, "We've got her under contract." So for 2 years, that script had sat there, and they hadn't thought to send that to me. In that moment, they sent it to me. It was truly a wonderful pilot. It was what I like to call, and others have, American Gothic. It was really about working people in the middle of the country, working at dead-end, low-paying jobs and making a life for themselves, and a woman with a dream with a kid, and she ain't going to get that dream right away.
Yeah.
So it had a very serious base.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me the script, and I said yes, and then we were off and running. We made the pilot, and the pilot was a huge hit. It was a beautiful work. It was directed by Paul Bogart, and we cast it with Polly Holiday and Beth Howland and Vic Tayback, who did the movie as Mel.
Yeah.
And so we were off and running. We found a boy, the boy that did the movie. He didn't work as well in television. And so we then found Philip McKeon, who played Tommy for the 9 years we were on. And we were a hit. They put us on After All in the Family on Sunday night. That was the best lead-in you could possibly get. And, you know, I'm going to say a number now that is not a reality anymore. 40 million people a week saw that show.
Wow.
There's no way that many people watch one show anymore because there's so much product on.
Right.
But it was an instant hit. And it was a hit not only because of the time slot, I think, but because it was about people that were identifiable. And America knew those people, and they were those people. And they wanted to see her. And they wanted to see her win. And they wanted to see how she raised a kid. Mm-hmm. I've just met somebody recently who said to me a beautiful thing. She said, "You don't know this, but you're the only person in America who never had you for a mother." I know. And it moved me so much. It's my friend Sandy. And she said, I'd come home from school. My mother wasn't there. And people have said this to me for years. And I got to watch you. And young women, young mothers have said to me, I got to watch Alice. And I said, my kid's in a high chair. If she can do it, I can do it. I'm going back to school. I'm getting off welfare. There's nothing more powerful than television. And it behooves us to tell the truth and to entertain people so that they feel, you know, powerful.
Yeah. And you found yourself in the position of just being thwarted into being a public figure because of Alice.
Yes.
And we talked about the other night, but can you tell some of our fans at home, like, how it brought you to this position of becoming more enlightened?
Sure. Well, you know, we'd been on the air for a year. We were on our second season, and I got a letter from the National Commission on Working Women, Washington, D.C., and it was signed by the then Willard Wirtz, who was in the House of Representatives, and a couple of other people who invited me to come to Washington because they had done a national poll through magazines, you know, all the women's magazines and popular magazines, People, whatever the magazines were, that were weeklies. And the question was, who do you think best represents the working woman in television? And the answer came back in legions, in numbers, Alice. And this was when I understood the recognition factor, because we'd just been at Warner Brothers on stage three, you know, churning them out.
Yeah.
And we were soon on the air, and you could feel that we knew we were a time slot hit, and we knew we were a ratings hit. But now I was out in the world. You know, it took till the second year where people recognized me on the street. But this was something big, and they invited me to Washington because they were doing a broadcast award ceremony, and they were giving awards to the documentary film and radio people, makers, producers, who had made films and radio specials and television specials about working women in and what the conditions of working women were in terms of financial, social, physical, emotional, psychological needs, and if they were single mothers, what were their lives like? So they were giving awards to all the nominees, and they asked me if I would come and give the award. And when I got there, they said, "We're naming the award the Alice Award." And it was made by Tiffany. It was a beautiful triangular piece of glass.
Yeah.
And I was the host that year. And in future years, we gave awards to Dana Delaney for China Beach, Valerie Harper for her work on Rhoda, and others in television and in film and radio. And the commission was a non-governmental commission, mm-hmm. which was unique because it would find out by its research what were the issues for working women, what did they need, mm-hmm. and then go to the policymakers in Congress and say, these are real issues. So the bottom line to your question is, how did Alice change me? It politicized me. And all of a sudden, they asked me to go to rallies, Equal Rights Amendment rallies and marches, mm-hmm. to go to rallies about unionizing, rallies about working women, single mothers, all over the country. Suddenly, I was out speaking to groups of people. I'd never done that before.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been an actor and a singer, and I'd been in Broadway and off Broadway, and now I was in television, and the power of television came to me and said, you need to do this because this is the impact that you're now involved with.
Yeah.
And it's your responsibility. You're speaking from the situation I was speaking of, a situation of privilege. I was now making money I never, ever imagined I would make. I was invited to speak at the Washington Monument to a huge union rally. And, you know, Gloria Steinem was there and Bella Abzug, people who had started the women's movement. And Pete Seeger was singing on the stage. And suddenly I was on the stage. And one thing that helped me was as I was invited to speak to people, not knowing what to say to people, how to approach them from a position of, I'm just an actor playing a part. What could I possibly give you? Somebody said to me, showing up is enough. Show up and you'll find out what you have to give. So, you know, in all the marching that we did, we were asked to speak and make speeches and get up and rally people. And until you have a speechwriter or you know exactly what it is you're there for, you're kind of at a loss at the beginning. So it occurred to me to wear the Alice uniform. And so there was a limousine driving me from my hotel to the Washington Memorial to do this union rally. And I thought, this is anachronistic. Get me out of this car.
Yeah.
I'm not coming in a limousine to go to a workers' union meeting.
Right.
So I got out of the car. We all walked. You know, that was the right thing to do because I was now a woman of privilege talking to people who were in dead-end, low-paying jobs and looked to Alice as their spokesperson. Alice, and I will finish with this line, represented 80% of all women who work in this country. That blew my mind. 80% of all the women who work in this country are blue and pink collar women. And so that's huge. And that emboldened me to speak, to learn what the issues are, and to be present and to show up.
Having been a woman also, too, in our industry, there's been so much controversial in Hollywood and starting in such a young age, and now you're still working. How has Hollywood culture and set culture changed to you?
Well, it's impossible for me to describe how it's changed. The world has changed. Hollywood changes for a woman when she turns 40.
Mm.
And, I was successful in my 40s, and at a certain point, if you don't have that niche, which I had with Alice because we were on for 9 years, you start becoming invisible. You can feel the curtain closing. Even though it might be a gauze curtain, something starts to change. And you can look at all kinds of actresses. We call ourselves actors now. But you can look at all kinds of female actors and see that the history is that it changes for us as we get older. Mm-hmm. And that it changes for us more than it changes for men.
Yeah.
So that's a very real change. And at a certain point in this town, many years after I built my own home in Malibu and had a great deal of success, you know, in terms of the business and in financially, I started my own company and I developed and produced movies for television. I did about one a year. I directed an after-school special. I directed 2 episodes of Alice. I started to branch out into other areas, knowing that there would be a time when I would not be a leading lady anymore. Mm-hmm. I was going to be a character actress, which I always think I am anyway, mm-hmm. and those roles would start changing. So it was time for me to go back to New York.
No, but you have a company called Unlimited Possibilities. You're known for a song called Possibilities. What does that word mean to you?
Which one? Possibilities?
Yeah, and Unlimited Possibilities, both together.
Yeah. But the rest of the corporation is Unlimited Possibilities Limited.
Oh.
Because there is a limit. There is a limit to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And to the lifespan, to not to hopes and dreams, but to I think of limited as a reality check. Unlimited possibilities is the way I've lived my life. I never had a plan for this kind of success. You know, people, we look at each other and we think, wow, you really planned it well, you know, or you've done really well. You've had a great career. How did it? And I can't look back and say how something tracked because as if I had tracked it, as if I had planned it or designed it, mm-hmm. or had somebody come in and give me an architectural blueprint for my life. I just worked. I went to work because I was taught early on that work brings work. As long as it's not morally reprehensible, do the job you're asked to do. So I did a lot of off-Broadway things that weren't necessarily hits, and I did my chorus work, and then I got out of the chorus. And then there was a time where I didn't work, and then I questioned. There was a period in my life which was quite fallow, mm-hmm. in the theater in New York, and it was the 70s, and it was where things changed in New York. So possibilities are in your mind at that point because the stock market crashed. New York became a place where it was difficult to live, mm-hmm. on a financial and social levels. A lot of people were leaving. A lot of people were coming out here to, mm-hmm. California looking for work. And so that's when I started to – I shifted into first, and that was my next possibility. I see myself as somebody who's full of possibilities every day. You know, there's a wonderful expression, you can start your day over any time, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go through the day just because something bad happened, just grumbling about it for the whole day.
Right.
You can change your attitude about it. And so I changed my attitude about what was coming at me and decided to go for something. What could I do? Ah, I could sing. So I came out here with a nightclub act, and I worked at E Little Club in Beverly Hills, where nobody came.
Yeah.
But my friend Joan Rivers had worked in that club, and she said, I'm going away for a week. You can have the club. So I went to the club owner. And I said, Joan said I could have the club. It was on Cannon Drive in Beverly Hills, little club. And he said, okay. And I gave him my picture. And he said, I'll put your card in the window. You know, come tomorrow night. You open tomorrow night. I probably had to sing for him. And I had a pianist and a drummer and a bass player, I guess. I'd put the act together in New York. And I came out here. I was married to someone at the time. It was early in my life, and we came out here and established and rented a house, and I go to the club that night to open, you know, in Beverly Hills and Hollywood, and the big picture of me in the window says Linda Lawn.
Oh no!
L-A-W-N. I was like, well, I guess I'm not famous yet. So that was way before, Alice, way before. It was when I decided to come out here and look for work. Yeah. And it took me 9 months. I could have had a baby. It took me 9 months to get my first job. It was a little tiny part in a pilot for Warner Brothers. And they came to me while I was shooting that pilot and said, we want to put you under contract. And 2 years later, Alice came about. So those are the possibilities of keep at it, do the work, take a chance, have the courage to change, get in your car, get on a plane, take your cat and go. I took my little cat, Minnie. I brought her to California. Aww. And I'm allergic to cats, so but I love this little cat. And then I started a life out here. And I stayed from 1974 till 95, and then I moved to North Carolina because that was the next possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I believe in them.
I would say, speaking of possibilities, something that you didn't think was going to come into your life just recently did, and we're talking about music.
Yeah.
So tell me about this brand new album you have coming out.
Well, my first CD I called Possibilities because it was from that play I did with Hal Prince called It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I sang a song called You've Got Possibilities. And so I so believe in it that I named my first album that. Now I've just recorded my second album. And it's for a company called Club 44 Records.
Mm-hmm.
And the executive president of the company, Wayne Hahn, sent me a song. First of all, he said, will you come and record for us? So he believed in me. I feel like he's discovered me. I'm discovered at this time in my life. Yeah. And my music director, Billy Stritch, introduced us, and I've been doing my club act with Billy for about 15 years now, and Billy's a great jazz pianist and singer and my constant guide as a musical and director and as a guide in terms of the quality of the approach to songs. And we work together. We collaborate on what songs do I want to sing. You know, you change an act every year and you tell your stories and then there are more stories to tell. So the act is really about who I am and who I was and what songs I love to sing. So Billy introduced me to Wayne Hahn and he said, I want to do an album with you. So on Thanksgiving week, we went into a studio. It's the happiest I've ever been. Oh, it's such joy to record. I've got a great band. I've got a five-piece band, including a phenomenal young violinist, a virtuoso jazz violinist, Aaron Weinstein. Billy's at the piano. I've got Tom Hubbard on bass, Jeff Barone on guitar, and Daniel Glass on drums. And we're in this studio, and I'm singing. And I'm singing all the songs I love to sing. It's a real swinging album. It goes American Songbook, and we do some Steely Dan. I do Black Cow because it tells a part of my story. Mm-hmm. And we do Brazilian. We do a Jobim. We do No More Blues. Oh, God, the orchestrations, the charts are just thrilling. It's a great album. Somebody said it should be a movie score.
Yeah.
But Wayne sent me this song one day as we were preparing to record, and he said, I don't know if you're interested in a new song, but his partner Joel Lindsay, who's A&R director at Club 44 Records, had written this song called Stars Would Fall. And he sent it to me as a demo, and I listened to it, and I burst into tears. And I called him, and I said, I have to do this song.
Yeah.
And so it's the single that's going to drop tomorrow for Valentine's Day. If people go on to iTunes and or their favorite site and order, the album is called Love Notes, which mm-hmm. is the name of my new act.
Yeah.
And so it's the name of my new album. It's called Love Notes. And the song is called Stars Would Fall.
And here's a sample.
Oh, boy. Let's do a sample of it.
Stars would fall and oceans dry, deserts flood and moons collide.
Summer skies would lose their blue, and I would be a fool for losing you.
Oh, I love it. That's
it's
so
a
exciting.
Beautiful song, isn't
so
it?
Exciting.
A brand new song that sounds like a classic. It sounds like, do I know this song? There's mm-hmm. something so familiar about it. So romantic and so emotional. So that's my single, and it drops tomorrow as a Valentine gift if you order the album.
Nice.
And the album will drop on March 27th. And it's going to be in all the Barnes & Noble stores.
Yes.
We just got all the Barnes & Noble stores as an actual album.
Yes.
Yes.
You
so.
Can also purchase it on Amazon for those of you who aren't Amazon.
Amazon, exactly. Yeah.
Super.
And
exciting.
Apple Music and Spotify. Yeah. So here we go. I'm very
Another
excited.
Another chapter of your life.
Another
I think it's going
chapter.
To be really big, too. I'm really excited.
Oh, I'm yeah. happy you said that. Thanks.
Yeah, putting it out there.
Thank you. Yes, put it out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
I trust you.
Thank you. But since we are on AfterBuzz TV's American Television Icons,
yes.
we have some TV questions for you, some rapid fire, just fun
okay.
little questions I'm
going
to throw at you.
Okay.
So starting with, in one word, describe Lucille Ball.
Oh, unique.
All right. Fantasy Island or Love Boat?
Or Love Boat?
Mm-hmm.
Silly.
No, which one do you prefer? Fantasy Island or Love Boat?
Oh, Love Boat.
Do you prefer Starsky and Hutch or Dukes of Hazzard?
Starsky and Hutch.
Best sitcom of all time besides Alice?
All in the Family.
All right. Best 70s sitcom. Wait, twice. Best 70s sitcom, but I guess that's the same era.
Well, the best sitcom of all time right now, for me right now, we're going to go into eras, is Mom.
Which you were on.
I was on, yes.
But
that's not why, but I just love it.
Yeah.
I just love it. I think it's truthful and hilarious at the same time, which I think is the essence of good comedy.
You were actually on Sean Saves the World.
I was.
And unfortunately, it was only on for one season, but it's crazy because both of you guys are so talented in the sitcom world. I mean, he's got the physical comedy going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, he does.
What was it like working with each other?
Oh, he's wonderful. Oh, God, he's wonderful. He's smart and funny and generous, and we just loved working with each other. I played his mother. And we, you know, we hit it off right away. There was something, you know, you either have that with people or not.
Yes. Yeah.
And we had it. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to finish each other's sentences. We knew what the other person was thinking and saying. That means a lot. It was a wonderful show to do. It was a wonderful company of actors. Very generous. And that matters, you know, whether you get canceled or you go on for years, you're going to work with the same people day after day after day. And you need to find a way to be a family who respects each other's boundaries and limitations and talent and be impromptu in the moment. And trust each other because here we are together. Yeah. It's you and me. Yeah. I'm not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any actors that you've never had a chance to work for that you wish you could have?
Well, you know, yeah, there are a lot.
Could you name two for me?
Yeah. Anthony Hopkins. I saw Brad Pitt the other night win and I thought, you know, he's very, very good actor. Joaquin Phoenix. I'm talking about movie actors now. Yeah. There are those three have just come to mind. But gosh, I'm going to blank on some names, but yeah, there are certainly a lot of actors and female actors that I'd love to work with. Charlize Theron turns me on. She's really an exciting, brilliant. I mean, when the variety in her, you know, the qualities of all the women who live in her that she keeps expressing are inspirational to me. And and Meryl, I'd love to work with Meryl someday. Yeah.
I keep on saying last question, but I do have to ask you, when you come upon a really difficult role, because you have, you know, we talked about the other day, the 520 dream.
520 an hour dream. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you approach something like that is emotionally tough for you? Or can be a challenging role?
Well, I approach everything differently. Depends on the role. I don't have one way of working. But
oh, okay. Sorry.
Is we over?
No. Oh, it was your song just started playing. Yeah.
Oh, hi. So everything I do is emotional or I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So everything I do has the quality of need, the depth of the need, brings you to the depth of your own passion, your own sense of who you are and what's missing, what you want. And this woman had a very strong need, and it was financial. And because I had done Alice, this is about a woman who worked in a factory and was denied a position on an all-male production line. This is a woman whose story we told in, 1981, 2, something like that. I mean, I've been telling these stories since 1976, stories about women who walk through fire and come out still standing, stories of women who have needs that are financial, but also needs that are spiritual and educational and physical and emotional that have not been met by the society. So we have to talk about these things and bring them to the surface. And television has been the best place to do it. All the movies we made in the 70s and 80s are being now made as features.
Yeah.
But we did all these movies. We told the stories of women speaking out. Mm-hmm. And now life follows art. Mm-hmm. And it gives women a chance, the opportunity, the power to say, oh, I do have a voice. I just need to be heard. I need to find a way to say what's going on for me.
Mm-hmm. In one sentence, tell me what you are most proud of in your career today.
Being right here right now and being asked to tell my story.
Oh, I love that.
It's true.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for Alicona. Joining us today,
I
Linda.
Love being here with you.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And thanks to you guys for joining us today. We had a fantastic time with you. And we'll see you again on American Television Icon.
Buy the album, Love
Notes.
Yes. Love Notes.
Yay!
So our sweet founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.